Hello and welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. This is season 2, episode 14, where we're talking all about AI. I'm very fortunate today to be joined with, on our very first episode, Amber Seville, our new data protection consultant. Amber, how are we doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. It was really, really great having you for your first session on the podcast. How did you find it?
Yeah, I loved it. I think it's quite an interesting topic to join on, to be fair. So I got quite lucky there.
Indeed. AI is always a hot topic for all of the listeners that we have joining in. So it was really great to hear some of your thoughts in the chat. We had a really great session talking about loads of different bits and pieces. We jumped around the news a little bit. We had a chat about some of the elements about Grok, OpenAI, as well as some identification, verification measures, and kind of talking about the implications of that and the potential of a collection of personal data, and maybe the implication of that on the children of today. Amber, do you have a particular highlight for the session?
I quite like how he ties it in with the Online Safety Act. I think that's quite nice. It's always good to link it back to children and protecting their rights as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we think it's an absolute corker of a session. We won't hesitate to let you jump in and enjoy. So take care. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. I've got another topical session today. Anybody that joined in last week in the GDPR radio session will probably know what we're talking about, as it was, you know, quite heavily sort of discussed last week as well. So probably going to be a similar vein to last week, but you know, a tiny little bit different, because I'm very fortunate today to be joined by Amber. Amber, say hello to all to the lovely folks. So Amber's one of our newer recruits in the business. She joins us as one of our data protection consultants, and we decided to give her a little trial by fire and throw her straight into the podcast. So we're I thought Mars cut out my sound then. Apologies. Before we do kick off into this session, just a couple of housekeeping bits from my side. As you will all know, these sessions are recorded. Obviously, we record them to publish them on things like Spotify and other streaming websites. Hopefully, Mars will be able to bob up a privacy notice. If not, it will drop a link to one in the chat. Just letting you know how you can exercise your rights if you would like to. Of course, also additionally, on the note of the AI bots in the chat, we tend to take the stance of not liking them in the session, just through sort of public perception from the community. They all kind of agreed that they don't really want them there, because we want this to be an open space for you to all discuss obviously things that are paining you and get involved and get involved in the community. And of course, these sessions are yours just as much as they are ours. We are just the body in which of hosting this lovely community. So please feel free to get involved as much as you want, leave your thoughts, and or if you want to jump in and have a quick chat with us, that is also always more than welcome. But in terms of housekeeping, that's all me. Amber, how has your week been so far?
Yeah, my week's been pretty good, thank you. It's been quite busy this week. I don't know if yours has been the same.
It's been a weird week for me. Quite topically, I know we were talking about this a little bit last week. I've spent most of today kind of like having an argument with what feels directly like ChatGPT. I know we were speaking last week a little bit about SARS and kind of the impact that AI has been having on SARS, and you know the weird kind of like legalese they use and the conversations that you have now with providing SARS or just trying to sort of, you know, go through this sort of general process of undertaking a SAR for someone. I had to sort of pause the time frame recently to request some clarification on quite a difficult SAR, and I've had the longest ever back and forth, and it really quite irritates me, and I don't have to do that so often. So I can only imagine how much it pains the people in the chat. And I know last week we were talking about it at some length. I know Janine jumped on and gave us some of her thoughts. So it was great to hear from her. You got any highlights in particular from the week, Amber? Apart from today's
podcast. This week. So that was nice.
Oh, lovely. What was you doing on site? Like a data mapping type thing, or?
Yeah, just data mapping. Spoke a lot about the Online Safety Act as well, which is quite interesting in regards to the social media bans and how to gain consent, stuff like that. It was quite an interesting topic of conversation. Quite controversial at the moment, I suppose, in terms of benefit versus risk.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of stuff sort of kind of consistently in the news and around the space in relation to the Online Safety Act, isn't there? Especially, I suppose, at the moment with like Ofcom and fines and the ICO kind of piggybacking on that, which, you know, I think seems to be a good thing at the moment. But I think the Online Safety Act is something that we'll be hearing much more of in the space to come. But I presume you're working with a customer who's utilising a website that's going to be accessed by children then.
Yeah, football based. So
interesting, very interesting. Yeah, I always used to enjoy doing the old age appropriate code of conduct stuff. Did a couple of bits and pieces with similar some other football clubs and stuff like that. It's really interesting. I kind of love doing that kind of stuff. And I know if Kate was here, she'd be, you know, she's such an advocate for talking about children's data and protecting it, which is, you know, always a really good conversation. So I'm sure probably a couple of folks are missing her this week, but you stuck with me again. So unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about it. Bit of DPP news on my end before we press straight on into what we've seen in the news this week. Just a note, I don't know if... I'm sure some of you will probably remember, but a couple months ago, we had our second ever in-person event on the Social Tenant Access to Information Requirements, or STAIRS, over in an event space in Leeds. Very successful event. We had loads of fun, and thank you, obviously, to everybody who came down. Now, we're looking to do another event very shortly about the Data Use and Access Act. So we have a doer event scheduled now in the calendar for 25th of May, I believe. Miles is nodding, so I'm going to presume I'm correct. And one thing that would be actually super helpful is sort of getting some of your guys' thoughts. Now, I don't know if you are even interested in making it, but just from your perspective, if you were to want to come, where do you feel like you would rather make the trip down to? Obviously, I'm sure you guys know that we're based in Leeds, but we know that our customers aren't predominantly. We did the last one in Leeds. We've got a couple options in terms of Manchester, Birmingham, you know, still in lovely, lovely Leeds, or maybe somewhere down south near London. So if anybody does have any sort of, like, I suppose, particular sort of preferences, that would be good for us to know. We kind of sort of like umming and ahhing about it a lot when we're planning these events, and we'd really love for as many people to be able to get there as possible. So whilst it might not be super easy, we will absolutely try our best to make it what is best for everybody, as many people as we can. I know you've seen in sort of the hopefully around LinkedIn and from some promo and stuff that we recently released the video for our STAIRS event. There's a little bit of an overview of what we did on the day of the event. So if you haven't, definitely check that out. But hopefully we'll be trying to get this to as many people as we can, because I know with STAIRS, a little bit more of a squash sort of like sector. We're trying to get it out to as many people as we can. Lauren, you know, I definitely take your point. I think we'd love to take it on the road and get out as much as we can. You know, unfortunately, our consultant's time and could be a little bit stretched sometimes. So we try to make it work as best as we can for as many people. I'm seeing a bunch of all sorts. Amber, if it had to be anywhere, personal preference purely, where would you like to go?
I don't know. I think a tour sounds good, to be fair.
It doesn't sound bad, does it, actually? I've always had the idea of, I don't know if you guys see it with like podcasts now, and just maybe not podcasts like this, but podcasts maybe people listen to, you know, like the more comedy based ones, or like Peter Crouch, and they go on tour and stuff like that. I always thought that was a bit of a strange concept, but maybe we should bring the Data Protection Made Easy podcast on tour. Bring a bunch of folk as well, and then we can do some events spattered in as we go. That sounds Well, it sounds quite fun, but maybe no one would turn up. Maybe no one wants to hear us witter on for 45 minutes or even longer. Then maybe that could be potentially quite torturous. So I wouldn't want to subject people to that necessarily. But it seems like in the main, Leeds is out of the running, unfortunately. but you know, we got a couple of, looks like the winner at the moment is Manchester. You guys are my sample audience at the moment. I think we'll take it over to some broader customers. But Manchester, London seem to be leading the charge, which is very interesting. Because me and Kate felt quite firm on Manchester. We thought Manchester must be good. Might be wrong. I might be very wrong. Which is why it's so great to get all your responses. Of course, if it is something that you are looking to come to, hopefully, I believe we have an event page ready to be published in relation to the event. So the event is completely free of charge. So anybody interested, absolutely, you know, get your interest down on there. Speak to, I'm sure, some of our sales guys, some of our account managers, if your customers will be in touch very soon, sort of talking about it. So if you'd love to come, have a little chat about the doer. Again, it'd be some of the lovely folks in this community. You'll get to meet some of our lovely folks over here as well. And it'd be absolutely grand to have you. So if you are interested in having a chat over the doer and what some of the changes may mean for you and what DPP would recommend, then I'd highly suggest having a little look on that form. But yeah, on that note, apologies. That was a bit of a whirlwind, wasn't it? So hopefully that's all okay. Any questions about the event, you feel free to just give either of us a shout or reach out to Miles. But on that note, should we get into the news? Amber, what have you seen in the news this week?
So I've actually seen that, I don't know if you've seen this, but OpenAI have launched a privacy filter, depending on your preference. So basically, it's an AI model that detects and removes personal data from text when you're inputting them into like a chatbot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you feel about that. I mean, it's supposed to be sort of like a privacy by design feature where it's, you know, data minimization and all that, but...
Do we want to make the prospect of putting data into these systems easier? And, you know, that's what it feels like. I don't know how I feel about it. I think it would likely be a good thing in preventing some of those sort of like case scenarios where people are doing it maybe unknowingly and they're not really aware of the impact on that. But, you know, as a business, I still wouldn't feel comfortable as of right now to be sort of changing my policy and going, oh, you know, actually, in fact, let's kind of jump in and start putting everything personal data wise into AI. I believe I see a hand up, Louisa. I think that's right. Do you have anything that you want to add?
It was a question, really, the matter you were just talking about. I was just thinking, I mean, personal data. I can see how artificial intelligence can, I mean, there's a very obvious things where it's a name or a date of birth or a thing. However, the issue of identifying bits of information that are actually pertain to an already identified person somewhere else in the grand body of whatever else is being released does not seem to me to be that simple, and I would not be confident
that
the AI would be able to pick up on that. So I don't see that that's going to be a very safe tool.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, to be honest. I think I was having a little scan of the news, and when I was reading this piece in particular, it says it uses some kind of sort of like, I call it deterministic rules. And base it off of patterns to distinguish public information to opposed to data that belongs to individuals. Now, that seems like a real hard ask, to be honest, from my perspective. You know, I would think that seemingly this is not 100% accurate. You know, it's probably one of those, you know, 99%, but probably a lot more of the 1% than you think will get through. I think it would be very hard to automate something that can 100% certain identify any discrepancies that may be personal data without much, much more rigid sort of set of rules in place.
And it actually plays upon a common misconception of what personal data is. It's not just the data which identifies, it's the identifiable person. And that's not very easy for a non-human.
Yeah. On your point, actually, they did state that it's 96% to 97% accuracy.
Yeah. So even worse, right? I mean, like, would you sort of trust the implication of AI using your data on something that wouldn't be 100% certain? You know, that definitely wouldn't be warranting me to change my approach as if I was a business or if I'm a DPO. You know, I'm not going to be, oh, you know, this seems slightly more secure. Maybe it's just an effort to prevent sort of the oversharing of personal data in that regard. But yeah, it's a weird one.
Probably using PII, the definition of PII, not personal data, which is much easier. Yeah.
The thing is that that's not even my main concern. Isn't even the accuracy of it. It's they're still processing the personal data in order to determine what is personal data and then redacting it. And then you wonder where that information's going. Are they using it to train their AI model? Probably, yeah. In most instances, you'd imagine so.
Yeah, well, it's open source, isn't it? So you got to kind of consider the implications of that. Carl, just on your point, I will double check if that's a bank holiday. We kind of threw a date at the wall the other day. We're just like, that seems like a well-rounded date. Yeah. Oh, is it? Oh, gosh. So I think it may be. you know, we don't expect anybody to come on a bank holiday. You're probably all just listening to me just do that whole long spiel then thinking, why on God's earth am I going to be turning up to listen to data protection people on a bank holiday? Ignore me. We'll go back to the drawing board. We're going to come back to you with a better date. Julie, do not worry. We'll still find a good date for you. Do not worry. And anybody that still wants to be interested, feel free to, you can still like register now. We can change those. If the date doesn't work, then you can sort of rechange that if you need to reach out to us. But we will keep you posted in that regard. But yeah, I was thinking the same thing, Lauren. I was looking at my diary. I thought 25th looks like a good day. I've got nothing on. That sounds lovely. Much to my dismay. So apologies, folks. If Miles can figure out another date by the end of this podcast, I'll let you know. But if not, just keep your ear out. I'll probably put it in the podcast chat after the session once we find a better date. But can only apologise. Please don't come see me on bank holiday. I will probably potentially be slightly drunk. I don't know. I can't confirm that. In celebration of the GDPR, of course, because what other reason is there than that? You don't need a better reason, really, do you? But in other elements of the news, got sort of a few things. There's always sort of AI news pieces, isn't there? And, you know, I'm sure people love to talk about it. I feel I get more and more frustrated as the weeks pass about AI. I just, it constantly feels like something that kind of just kind of slightly frustrates me sometimes. I want to see news pieces about data protection, really. Where I can, I feel like this—that's where I want to talk. That's what I want to see. I want to see the ICO and the other regulators, hopefully, looking into stuff like that. But you know, I dismay. In terms of some other bits, little bits and pieces on Grok. I don't know if we remember a couple of weeks back talking about Grok AI, the severely concerning AI that was used by the social media platform X. Just a little tiny piece on that in terms of an update that Musk, as in Elon Musk, failed to appear before Paris prosecutors over concerns of non-consensual sexual imagery on X using Grok AI. So I believe it was a voluntary interview with prosecutors, so he's not sort of like very flippantly not turned up, but it is seemingly quite clear that he's trying to avoid an element of the blame game here over the use of Grok and its use of AI, specifically with the regards of sexual images, as well as some, including children. I think the not-for-profit watchdog, I think the CCDH, reported that an estimated 3 million sexualized images were created, including 23,000 depicting children, were posted over an 11-day period. absolutely staggeringly disgusting.
Yeah.
And it seems like they are still incessant, or Musk is still incessant of any wrongdoing. They've denied in this case any kind of wrongdoing, and believe that any judicial action is abusive and politically motivated. And it really annoys me, news like this. And you kind of hope it's not true. It was the 11-day period thing for me. It's really, really quite upsetting. I remember last time that we spoke about it. I think me and Kate was kind of both getting really quite irate, and I'm sure everybody feels the same. I think it's just another use of a demonstration of what kind of uncontrolled and unregulated AI can lead to, and unfortunately, probably to the detriment of many individuals who may have been utilized in this sexualized manner. God knows what the implications on them personally. I think it's absolutely horrible.
I suppose this is one of those instances where you wonder, is just sort of like an overarching ban worthwhile for kids? I don't personally agree so, but I see in these instances, it's like, it is just so harmful.
It's a pro for the conversation, isn't it? And I think, you know, I wouldn't say I'm particularly sort of old. I was in an age where social media was kind of around what I did at an age as like a teenager, 15, 14, I think, when social media was kind of introduced to me. But I think now more than ever, it seems to be including even younger people, you know, even kids in like primary schools now, you know, opening them up to this kind of content, which is obviously why we have things like the Online Safety Act, but opening them up to content like this is potentially really troubling for not only for their mental state, but for like future implications in the future. You know, it's not good to try and train, not maybe train, but to, it's almost kind of demonstrating that this kind of behavior is acceptable almost if something appropriate isn't taken in respect of X. I'm fairly certain Grok has been taken down for the time being, whilst the investigator may be wrong, because I don't go anywhere near that absolute sort of cesspit at the moment that X is. But it's concerning, you know. I think in the main, things that are available to children, which, you know, is a data protection thing, and it isn't. It's more of a moral thing sometimes as well. It's, especially nowadays, it is, you know, truly a really concerning thing.
Yeah, and it's so accessible. Like Lauren mentions about Roblox as well, and how it's basically integrated into things that are used by children or accessible by children. And there's no sort of like control over it.
The issue, isn't it? It's the lack of control. But how do you control it when it feels like there are so many sort of little sort of back doors and ways in? I think from what I remember, I've never used Roblox before, but I have like little brothers that do. And my mum also works in a school, and she works with special educational needs children and in safeguarding. And she'll always come and ask me questions about Roblox. I don't know why she asks me. I don't know if she assumes that I spend time playing Roblox on the weekends. But just to try and understand if this is something that like that kids are seeing in the main, whether my brothers are seeing it and stuff like that. And it's the type of stuff that she's saying is out there on Roblox, and how easy it is to make an account and to, you know, join and discuss things with children is, you know, severely worrying. But how as organizations or as companies like Roblox, how do you sort of contain that? Because yes, you could ask for IDs, but you know, if I'm 4 years old trying to play Roblox, I don't have an ID. And as a parent, would I feel comfortable with taking a live image of them? I know live image is a lot of the solutions that people look for now for verification, but I also don't really feel super comfortable with that either. So I do think it's a hard thing. It kind of makes me just want to wipe the slate clean and start again. But
and you don't want to ban it either, because you don't want to push the like use of AI or the use of social media underground, because ultimately kids will find ways to access it regardless.
Yeah, always, right.
People have VPNs or, you know, and then that gets a lot darker because then you really can't regulate what's going on.
Well, I think that showed with Pornhub, didn't it? I believe there's some statistics showing that the majority of individuals were just able to kind of bypass the age verification, just kind of making it pointless. You know, again, it's really hard to do. I think you're right, Pete. Obviously, they tried to do it in Australia, didn't they? And it's showing that it's still, you know, not that plausible. It's such a hard thing now because, you know, life for a lot of people is social media and being online. You can't fully restrict that. It's not possible. The kids are kids and they want what they want. And, you know, if they want to play Roblox on the weekend, they're probably going to do that irrespective of, you know, I remember as a kid trying really, really hard to play GTA on my PSP. That was all I ever wanted. All I ever wanted. And you find a way. I ended up getting my hands on it. Not for long because my mum found me and grounded me. But, you know, they will try to find a way. And it's difficult now. And I think maybe, you know, it's time to, I don't think it's time to consider sort of wider conversations with children because it is seemingly happening. You know, you see it more in the educational sector. Parents are seemingly so much more conscious of this now as well. You know, I'm waiting to see what gives in some kind of larger kind of adaptation of like a mindset, but it is such a hard task. I can't act like I have the answers because I really don't. It's a real difficult thing.
It's about balance, really, isn't it? Because I don't agree with people like children submitting photographs or IDs or even biometric recognition because you're just funneling even more children's data into those systems.
Yeah.
Where's the minimization coming in there, really?
Well, they claim they're not processing it, don't they? I think I've seen a few sites saying that. We take the images, but we don't process them. How do you feel about, like, image verification of age? Because I kind of feel it's sort of away from the processing, probably the unnecessary processing of data. Do you feel that predicting age is a wise thing?
Absolutely. No, definitely not. Because then how are you doing that? Is it automated decision making? Probably.
I would be interested on what the metrics are. I think it'd probably be very hard to distinguish someone that is, you know, potentially like 17 to 18.
I
think the use of images for it is probably over onerous and unreasonable. I don't think it makes sense. I don't think it's worth it. I mean, also you've got to understand that not all individuals are going to naturally look the same. So what metrics are you basing it off? You know, we saw it with the police, didn't we? They want to use facial recognition for crimes now. Yeah. Obviously the impact of that is probably much greater, potential unlawful arrest, potential bias.
Inherently it's going to be discriminative in some form.
Of course. Of course. I had not a full beard, but at like 16, I could grow a little bit of facial hair. I looked quite aged, to be honest with you. I looked like I'd been through some stuff. So that might not have worked for me. And similarly, my brother, who's 18, is like 5'2", and he looks like he's like 12.
Oh, bless him.
So no, bless him. He is great. He's a great old soul. But it's a difficult one, and I don't like it. And there's also the expectance of sort of IDs, I guess, being available. I know, especially for kids, which probably might not always be the case, apart from like passports, which again, don't really like the idea of the over collection of that there and the over reliance on having to sort of outsource that as well. I think maybe that's the problem. There's a lot of like fast quick fixes at the moment. There's a lot of patching stuff over in there, and it's you know, I really don't, I don't like that. It feels like at the moment new processes are coming out of nowhere. We're going to use this solution for ID. I believe Anthropic, the creator of Claude. I know Claude is sort of super sort of hot in the news at the moment in terms of like the use of Claude. It's seemingly unbelievably intelligent as far as we're understanding. I know we spoke last week about the fact that it can actively identify security flaws in smaller businesses. And also I think it can like kind of build like websites and stuff like that. Not tested it fully, but I'm aware it's something that a lot of people are getting involved in. They've just introduced some identity verification for its users to prevent abuse, enforce usage policies, and ensure compliance with legal obligations. I wonder what they mean by prevent abuse, to be honest with you. I'm not sure in what matter Claude would be used for abuse. I don't know if like it has like deep fakes or maybe something like that. I can't say I know enough about it. But it's using a company called Persona, which is a slightly controversial third party, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but people seem to not be happy with its use. I don't know if it's potentially the implication of the data it's collecting. Maybe it's got some concerns around its security measures. But they must have to provide a valid government issue forward ID and may be required to submit a live selfie in some cases. And they said that the documents will only be used for verification and compliance purposes and will not use it to train its AI models, which, you know, you'd really hope it wouldn't. But again, is this a good thing? I mean, I think it's a better thing than not. It seems like Claude is such an intelligent tool that it is important to probably regulate it. I think the implication of having identity verification is that saying that it is available for children, potentially? Maybe they're saying that children are using it a lot. Does that mean all AI have to adopt something very similar? Now it's so easy to sort of interact with AI.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a lot of potential for kids to be accessing AI. I think it'd be hard to prove otherwise.
Well, I don't know what a child would even use AI for. I mean, I think it's a good thing to make sure that it's secure, but I wouldn't know what. Maybe just like, I don't know. You know what? I don't. Homework. Yeah, that's a great point, Peter.
It's like every Google search you do, Copilot gives you your top answer.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So maybe it is being utilized, but they're stating the abuse of it. Now, I don't know Claude. I don't know what it's been used for. I'm curious to know how it's being used in an abusive manner, and why this is the best sort of output for it, because obviously it seems in compliance with the Online Safety Act and what they're trying to do. Peter, I see you bobbed your hand up. Do you want to jump in, mate, and give me your thoughts?
Yeah, sure. Hello, can you hear me, right?
I can hear you grand, yeah.
Cool. So I do sort of, controversially for a data protection professional, kind of find AI quite interesting. So I read up an awful lot about it. And the Anthropic thing was some hackers managed to get it and use it for a cyber attack. So the government ID thing that they wanted to implement was so that they knew who was using the site, because obviously malicious actors don't want their identities published or their identities logged anywhere, the tools that they're using. So it was a security measure against that. I don't think it was kind of targeted at children specifically. It was just for...
Okay.
It was just for Anthropic to show we are doing something to stop hackers using our tools.
I see. That makes a lot more sense, actually, in that case. So it's because it's so intelligent, isn't it, that they're finding that, because I mentioned that it can find vulnerabilities. So obviously that is clearly going to open up the door for bad actors, isn't it? That makes perfect sense, Peter. Thanks so much for sharing that.
Yeah. And the problem is
it was Mythos that you're talking about, the new product. Sorry.
What's the differentiation, Peter? Because I can't say I know too much about Claude in open honesty.
So you've got your general purpose AI, which is your ChatGPTs, your co-pilots, that kind of thing. You know, your general LLMs and that.
Sure.
They respond to sort of any query you want by basically searching the internet. What Mythos does is it's called a frontier AI.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
You're still with us, Peter.
Oh, sorry. Mythos is what's called a frontier AI. So it's AI created with a specific purpose, and that specific purpose is to find vulnerabilities. So when they launched it, they rolled it out to a select 40 number of companies, including all the big financial institutions, because I was reading somewhere, I think it was Lexology had an article about it, that it was able to find a vulnerability in a line of code on a website from decades ago that would have taken an analyst days and days to find. So it's that everybody's panicking about at the minute. Well, all the cybersecurity professionals are panicking about at the minute.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like if we could sort of strip away the potential of bad actors, it would be a fantastic tool to help people identify their own vulnerabilities, wouldn't it? But then there's that implication of, you know, opening it up to those kind of people. And I guess that's kind of inherently the problem a lot of the times, isn't it? It's more the kind of people who are using it, as opposed to the intention behind it, I suppose, is never always malicious when people make things like this, or ever malicious, really, I want to thought. But it always tends to be the people.
It's the car analogy, isn't it? A car can be a lethal weapon in the wrong hands.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. No, you super bob on there, Peter. But no, really, really, really appreciate that. That's some really great insight. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's flip this into a little conversation that is relevant to us lovely folks as practitioners, shall we? Amber, I'll float this to you, and I'm really keen to get your thoughts as someone I know who, you know, knows a fair whack about AI. As businesses and as organisations, the reliance on AI is becoming quite significant now, I think, in being used for all sorts of reasons and measures around the business, whether it's to expedite stuff or to streamline a process, maybe for resources, who knows now. What do you think an organization, you know, any kind of standard organization should be considering, should be doing, should be working towards? You know, what do you think your kind of top tips are as a data protection consultant?
I think the obvious one is policies and procedures, but I think the sort of the more important element of that is making sure that people understand those. So for me, I always advocate in every area of data protection law is training and awareness. I think it's super, super important, especially in the context of AI. Obviously, I delivered an AI training session to the support desk team the other day. And I think it's quite clear to me that, you know, as AI progresses, it becomes ever more difficult to understand it ourselves, even as consultants.
Sure. Yeah.
There's some areas of AI and I'm like, oh, wow. Like, you know, when you look at neural networks and the different terminology, it's so complex. Terminology is constantly developing because AI is constantly developing. You know, you go from sort of like using definitions based on functions versus on power. So understanding those is really important and how they work. Not only sort of internally when we're using AI, but also when we're advising our clients as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Being able to sort of explain it, because ultimately, if you're using AI or you're wanting to use AI, there needs to be something that explains how this system works, because algorithms are really super complex. You want to understand how your data is being used, where it's being used, where it's being taken from. Especially with a lot of AI systems, there's a lot of data scraping. There's a lot of sort of like opaque processing around whether they're using it for training as well. So for me, I think my main thing is probably delivering training sessions, trying to be as clear and transparent about what's going on as possible.
So you feel a desire to train not just the internal, but to be aware with the external as well, you know, the staff and the customers. And I think that's, you know, I think that's key. I think we kind of need to be making an effort to inform as many people as we can as a business about the implications of AI, especially the AI that we're using. We know that obviously colleagues and individuals will use AI. Again, I'd be keen to see if any organizations, especially here, anybody knows of like sort of company kind of wide bans on AI. I wouldn't imagine so, not anymore. But it, you know, it's all about how you regulate it, but you can't regulate it with a policy alone, you know. Policies are fantastic, and Kate loves a good policy. She loves a good procedure, as do I, as do Amber, as do all the consultants at DPP. But what we think has to come with a policy is it has to come with that awareness. It has to come with that further development of people's knowledge. But, you know, the DPO can't always be the person that knows everything about AI. It's real difficult. And, you know, I think there's a lot of sort of noise on the space of people who are, you know, oh, I'm an AI expert in this, and I imagine AI experts are probably few and far between at the moment, with how much things are consistently changing. I don't know if you can be an expert in something that changes so fast. You know, God knows how hard those folks are working to keep up to date with the knowledge on some of these systems of AI. But, you know, completely agree, Amber. I've always been such a huge soft fan of making staff aware and training. I just love element of training staff. It's something that I'm personally, you know, always been quite strongly sort of opinionated about. I suppose because a lot of my role involves sort of the training of my staff as well as a manager, and I love doing that. I love going out and training some of our lovely customers. I love doing awareness pieces like this on the podcast. So it's probably why I feel particularly strong about it. But is there anything else? So you want awareness, you want policies and procedures. Is there anything else you feel an organization, not must have, but would be good to have to kind of help a company in respect of risk? Maybe in the essence of like procurement potentially in some of these solutions?
Absolutely, yeah. Carrying out due diligence. And that ties in really well with transparency, to be fair, because you want to look at what they're doing. You want to understand how they're operating. I have seen, to be fair, when I've conducted like due diligence or DPIAs on those types of vendors before, some of them have sort of like a manual or a guide as to how those algorithms work. And I think that's, if you're operating AI or if you're doing due diligence on AI, it's really important. They're such a useful tool. But obviously, you need to make sure they're written in layman terms, you can understand them, because it is so complex. But yeah, in terms of due diligence, risk assessments as well, of course, DPIAs. Okay. I'm quite a big fan of the conformity assessments in the EU.
Yes, indeed, yeah. What do you think the implications are, or what do you think the likelihood is that we adopt something very similar to the EU AI Act and the conformity test? Because we've got the principles, haven't we, right now, which, you know, tie into what we have in terms of the UK law,
yeah,
fairly well. But do you think there is a need, and do you see it likely that we will have the implementation of something like the conformity test?
I think there's absolutely a need. I think the likelihood is a trickier question.
Mm.
They seem very opposed to following in the EU's footsteps,
sure,
since we left. I really hope we do. I think the sort of risk-based approach with the four separate tiers that they have to separate the different levels of risk presented by AI and the different actions that are required, and having an overarching ban for ones that are, you know, completely high risk, prohibited.
Mm.
I think that's a really good thing. I think that's something we ought to implement, especially, you know, with some of the things we talked about today. It's actually scary seeing what's happening.
Oh, it is definitely not just sort of as consultants, but as consumers and as people, and as, you know, as brothers, as sisters, as mothers, as dads. You know, it's concerning from a moral level, and you know, from the perspective of business, we're always looking to obviously make the business better, but we've also got to be thinking about the people that it may impact. Stephanie, you made a point about smart glasses in the workplace. I think that's really interesting, actually. Can't say I've ever given it any thought. Can't say that question has ever been sort of like popped onto my lap, actually. But I suppose in respect of you in the housing sector, you know, it's going to completely depend on exactly what you're using it for. I know AI smart glasses are becoming quite a big thing now. I think Meta was trying to make it so you could like recognize someone through the glasses, either like a facial recognition technology. I think that got batted away. I might be wrong. But in respect of a housing association, if you were using it from the perspective of, you know, maybe more demonstrations of showing people how to do stuff, you know, you'll have contractors who are going to be on site. Are you using it to show that like damage has happened to a property potentially? You know, I feel pretty comfortable with that, I feel. You know, it may negate the need for, you know, kind of like work-mandated phones. Maybe they're easily controllable. And I don't know how I feel about in respect of safeguarding. Maybe if you'd use it something like a body-worn camera, but is it more clear to an individual you're going to be recording them if it's a body-worn camera? Again, maybe you're in situations where you have to discreetly turn it on. So, you know, I appreciate that in the respect of housing, that can be a common theme. You know, sometimes body-worn cameras are something that may have to be turned on. But again, there should be an expectation that we're saying, that we could say, before we turn the cameras on, that there may be a possibility that the camera is turned on. Are they going to know that with AI? Does that then make it covert? I don't know. It's a real interesting conversation, Stephanie. And if you have, oh great, even better. Before I even ask, Stephanie, do you want to jump in?
Hi there. It just literally was. We had like someone's noticed that someone was wearing them, and it's just literally working. So at the computer, working, using them. And that was okay. Where I was sort of like looking to see what people's thoughts were on that, because it's obviously something that's coming in now. So yeah, it's sort of like just someone mentioned it. So
it
was like,
personal?
Oh.
Is it a personal like owned like AI smart glasses, or is it a work mandated one?
No, they're personal.
Yeah, I suppose that's probably where my issue would arise with it from. Is, mm-hmm. you know, if they're just working, you know, if they're just like me, they're on the desk kind of typing away, they're still going to have access to company data on a personal device, because if it's recording or if they're taking snapshots of company data, which could very likely have data of tenants, contractors, all sorts of folk, right?
Yeah.
you know, maybe if they're out in the field, they're a housing officer, they may be picking up even more so people actively sort of in the day-by-day duties. You can't control that if it's a personal device, really. It's going to be really difficult. You know, if you wanted to adopt something similar, maybe having work mandated devices, it could be a good idea if you really see like a solid use for them. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I suppose it would fall under like your bring your own device policy, but that's something that even I wasn't even aware this was really a big thing until my friend the other day was like, oh yeah, I've got these glasses. And immediately I was like, oh, this is a thing now. I thought, you know, I can't believe how quickly it's developing, but
it's very big in the news. Like last year, I think with like the Meta sort of Ray-Bans and stuff like that. I think that was the big one.
And I think those are things that you really have to start considering when developing your policies, like the things that exist now, the things that people might, you know, actively bring into work, and you wouldn't even realize. Like I would never have been able to tell.
I've seen them. My friend brought them on holiday. He went to Carnival in Trinidad. And he wanted the glasses to record as he goes. He don't really like use his phone very often. And I guess a bit awkward when you're kind of out and you bring your phone up recording. He showed me, because I'm always intrigued on these things from a data protection perspective, as always, you know. It always comes outside of work with me. I'm always sort of intrigued in it sort of broadly, as you do when you're working these things for long enough. And I was like, oh, it is really quite discreet, isn't it? And I don't know how I feel about that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think
that's what people were highlighting, is that they weren't sure how they felt about that, because obviously you're sitting in the office. And I think as well, when it's like quite an enclosed space, it's the noise around you. So you're not only you're recording everything if you're recording. Yeah. So it's the people speaking behind you. From a safeguarding perspective, I was thinking of, like, you know, if someone was like hiding for any reason, you know, and then they come in and then, you know, they're recorded and it's uploaded somewhere. That's from the angle sort of like I was.
No, definitely, Stephanie. I think what I would say, if I was to give any advice, if you don't mind, is that I would check your bring your own device policy. I would see what you currently say in respect of that. I would potentially consider what this individual is seeing with these glasses, how often they're using them, what they may be using them for. If you outright don't allow these kind of devices at work that may record, then as long as it's in policy, then you have a reasonable argument to tell him to not use or her to not use those glasses, especially if there's an implication that it may be recorded. You know, there is as Sarah's saying, there's a potential risk, gosh, combinated the two words, a potential risk of a breach, even broader implications in terms of data being held on personal devices, potentially very vulnerable information. So check your policies, check you've got some justification internally, and then if you know, you feel strongly enough about it and you're hearing complaints from other individuals, I'd probably ask that they step away from using that. And you know, if the business wants to use it, then I suppose that's a different conversation. We've got to look at, you know, work mandated smart glasses. That would be kind of cool. Work mandated smart glasses, you'd have like a bunch of folk like Tony Stark just like throwing stuff up.
Just also throwing it out there, the comeback of their prescription. There you go.
Yeah, interesting. Gosh.
It's a whole new world, isn't it now? It's a whole new level.
It really is, and it is hard to keep up these days. It really is. But thank you so much, Stephanie. If you have any more questions about that or you need any more advice, just feel free to drop me a line on Teams if you want. I'd be happy to chat that through if you're still having any concern. That's not a problem.
Will do. Thank you so much.
All right, perfect. Thanks so much. Well, on that note, on that very lovely note, I'm sure we could talk for much, much longer. We are at the end of this session now, unfortunately. Before we go, Amber, of course, with it being your Data Protection Made Easy debut, do you have any closing thoughts for the folks listening?
I think for me, the biggest thing is it's really important to balance risk with everything else. Do you know what I mean? I think for me, like, an overarching ban of something doesn't solve the issue. No. I think it's really important to, you know, be reasonable and balance sort of the needs and benefits of AI with the potential risks. Make sure that you have appropriate policies, procedures in place. Make sure people are aware. Make sure you've carried out risk assessments. Make sure those risk assessments are carried out well as well. Because I've noticed as well, I've reviewed quite a lot of DPAs recently where I feel like they've just been completely in favour of the AI rather than actually accurately reflecting the risk.
Yeah, for sure. Probably written by the processor, right? In most cases.
Of course. I think it's just due diligence is so important.
Completely agree.
Yeah, I think training goes hand in hand with that, knowing what you're looking at, knowing what you're looking for, particularly when it comes to whether data is used for AI training models. That's something I think gets overlooked quite a lot. So
absolutely. Well, I must admit, I must say thank you very much for joining us today, Amber. Thank you very much to all you lovely folk for joining us on another Friday as well again. We hope you have a lovely weekend. We hope we catch you next week where we'll be talking about weaponized SARS again, part two. So we'll be going over some of your concerns in relation to SARS, weaponized SARS. So any questions, we still have the form up, I hope. So start firing them in and we'll be looking to answer them all next week. And we'll be back to you shortly in relation to the Doer event. We hope that we can see some of you there. Have a lovely weekend and we will catch you next week.
Thank you.